Got a little bone to pick with the programming department. Would it kill you every once in a while to play a little fog hat?
Our broadcast week. Let's make it good. I got a lot of stuff to get to still, too. I tell you what, that story in our local news there, that is infuriating. Two pedestrians killed by a hit-and-run driver this morning in Bothell. And how? I mean, usually hit and runs. They say that the driver says he was driving to work at 10:20 this morning, but often a hit and run, somebody has alcohol or other drugs in their system, and they're hoping they can sober up a little bit before they're caught. But two people hit, and this one, it just strikes at my heart because I have a wife and three daughters, all of whom walk or run several miles every day. And when you hear about something like this, it's heartbreaking. They haven't identified the two victims, but it's around Alderwood Manor in Bothell at 10:20 this morning. And that soundbite from State Patrol Trooper Rocky Oliphant, I mean, that is unbelievable how they caught this guy. Let me play that for you.
We had troopers, had a business down the road from this collision scene that were trying to review surveillance video. And while they were in talking to the clerk, reviewing the video, the clerk pointed out a vehicle that just pulled into the gas station with substantial front right damage to the vehicle.
That's unbelievable. They were in to look for surveillance video, and the guy pulls into a gas station. Says he was on his way to work. So that's one of those stories where I hope that the law, which too often we're just too lenient with people. But if you are in an accident and you stop and it's truly an accident, then I could see a little bit of mercy. But a hit and run, and you look at the car, I'm seeing a picture of this vehicle and the extent of the damage to the front right. I mean, it crumpled much of the right side of the hood. And this person knew what they did, and they drove off. Were caught a few hours after the crash. So throw the book at that guy. All right, let's get to our big lead this hour.
The Big Lead Update.
So we had a listener who said, I don't care what your top story you were planning on today is, but you have to make this your real top story. And frankly, we had not seen the story until it was pointed out to us. And I have some additional audio from what we played at the beginning of the show. It's about a woman. She was in the backcountry of southeast Alaska with her brother and brother's girlfriend. They were on snowmobiles, and they were near her brother's yurt. And the brother's yurt has an outhouse. Shannon Stevens went in to use the outhouse. And by the way, I have structured my life in the hopes that I will never use an outhouse again in my life. I've worked very hard so I would never have to use an outhouse again. I've used them a couple times in the past, but I'm done. I'm done with outhouses, okay? And Nicole, am I exaggerating things? Because I can't remember. Is John Curley up in Clee Ellum, does he have an outhouse or is there some plumbing in it?
Oh, no, there's plumbing. There is an outhouse, but now there's plumbing as well. But it's outside of the cabin. It's up in a little, smaller cabin.
but he has to go outside. Like, if he has to go potty in the middle of the night,
yes,
he has to go outside. I've tried. I love John. John and I have become really good friends. I do not understand this at all. Maybe I got to go up and see it one of these days.
Oh, you should. He would love that.
Well, you know, Dory, there ain't no potty like a outhouse potty, because a outhouse potty don't quit.
We all needed that today. Thanks, Sean.
You're welcome.
No, we didn't. Oh, man. Okay.
That's anyway, a one taker.
That was very impressive, Sean. Okay, so anyway, Shannon Stevens, she's up at her brother's yurt's outhouse. She sits down, and all of a sudden, something bites her on the butt. And she said she thought that it was a squirrel or a mink. It turns out it was a bear.
Normally when we're out there in the summer or the fall or something, I'm used to shouting, "Hey, bear," the whole way. And it was dead of winter. I didn't think to do that this time. So I got in there and sat down on the toilet seat, and something just immediately bit me in the butt. So I jumped up and screamed.
And then she looked down, and it's a bear.
No, she didn't look down, Dory. She just ran. But she didn't know what had done it. Play the next cut.
Okay, from her brother Eric. Oh, that's right. Her brother Eric. And what they think is, since the outhouse isn't used in the dead of winter, that the bear used it as a den. And what I said a couple of hours ago, it's my message to the bear, if he's listening, that if your life has hit such depths that you consider an outhouse hole a cozy den, you really need to work on improving your life. And
but
so
isn't
here's
the
her brother.
World an outhouse to bears? They don't know the difference.
Well, after I said that, a listener texted in and said that if the bear doesn't work on improving his life, he's just going to spend the rest of his life wandering around aimlessly. Which, probably true. So here's her brother, Aaron.
I'm like, okay, I'm going to open the lid and look. And I take the headlamp and I grab the lid of the toilet seat and I lift it up. And right there, right at the level of the toilet seat, like maybe an inch or two below, is a gigantic bear face looking right back up at me.
Ah.
Yeah. Your predecessor, Nicole, Jake, his producer, he had a fear about snakes in toilets. And he would always check his toilets to make sure there wasn't a snake in it. But
I think that
I would
goes
suggest
through a lot of our minds, right? Doesn't it go through your mind, the snake thing? It is a little scary.
No, but if I'm bitten on the butt by a bear, I don't know that I'd ever be able to sit on a toilet again. And here's more from Shannon.
It felt like just a single, like, puncture. I don't know. Maybe it wasn't even a bite. Like, it might have been a swipe with his claw, potentially. I don't think we'll ever really know that part.
Yeah, and here's how they think the bear got in.
There's a way out in the back of the outhouse. There's a rock wall, and there's a way for a creature to get in through that rock wall. And so he probably just pushed the rocks over and got down into the hole.
I'm guessing that wasn't the first time that somebody had been to the bathroom out there. And so he had probably been stirring, right? Don't you think he was sleeping? He was hibernating and then had been woken by other people going?
I don't know, but I will say our listeners are very funny, because after we told the story at noon, I started getting a bunch of texts from listeners. One said, because they brought Department of Fish and Wildlife out and they checked the tracks and they said, oh, this was a black bear down in the outhouse. And one of our listeners said, I'd bite somebody's butt too if they pooped on me. Also, was it really a black bear? It must have been brown. Yeah, that's a good one. And then another
all right.
And then from the 360, Dory, I met that bear one time. His name, Winnie the Pooh.
That's a good one.
Okay, that one's good.
Oh, it's not as good as your little rap, though, Sean.
Oh,
all right,
thanks.
Up next in The Big Lead.
The Big Lead, Dory Monson Show exclusive.
A few months ago, our mayor, Jenny Durkin, said that Seattle isn't nearly as bad as all the critics are making it out to be, that it's all exaggerated, that she doesn't see many of the problems that have gotten us so much national negative attention. I think it's important to counterbalance what politicians are feeding us. I put up on my Twitter a couple of days ago a video from a local citizen journalist, Katie Davis Court. It just showed another street brawl in the middle of downtown Seattle. I saw another one where she was just, it was vile what was being directed at her. Katie Davis Court joins us here on the Dory Monson Show. Katie, always great to talk with you.
Love coming on. Thanks for having me.
Just give me your reaction when you hear people like Jenny Durkin say that this de-evolution of Seattle is greatly exaggerated, because you're actually out on the streets many nights, kind of chronicling what's going on out there. So what's your take on what politicians are trying to tell us?
I think it's a huge disservice to the community. You know, we have a Seattle City Council, along with our DA, Pete Holmes, and Dan Satterberg, who have culminated an environment in our city that is now run completely on disorder, criminal lawlessness, and violence. And because of their failure to prosecute these criminals that are protesting almost nightly in the streets, that all end in violence somehow, their failure to prosecute is just encouraging them to keep repeating. And it's almost like they are encouraging these protesters to keep the city almost under siege from being able to prosper.
You know, like I said, I don't even want to talk about what was being directed at you. It was so vile. But we're talking about a business community, a downtown where Nordstrom was attacked again a few nights ago, every single pane of glass broken for a block stretch. We had other businesses that have been under attack. What do you think, from what you're hearing, The people who are out there rioting, committing civil disorder, domestic terrorism on an almost nightly basis, what's their end game? What do they want?
They want, I know their end game. They are chanting death to America. They hate this country, and they want a complete anarchist environment. They are marching for anarchy. They're anarchists, and so they don't want any government, which is interesting because a lot of them also call themselves communists. So they're almost counteracting what they're actually marching for, because a communist government would be full government control in the end.
Right.
And so, yeah. And so I can't believe that we have city council members encouraging this when businesses, something that I've noticed as of recent, the last couple months, are people, just local residents in the community, are coming out that you wouldn't even, that are Democrats or leftists, that are coming out saying, you don't represent us, go home, we're sick of you guys burning, looting, murdering. And Antifa is not popular in the community. They might make it look like it is, but it's not. And at what point do people start speaking up? And I know that the police, they wish that they could have their hands more on the protesters. It's not the patrol officers, but whoever is their chain of command kind of has just allowed the anarchy to continue.
What you're saying is absolutely correct. And here's what I learned a long time ago. People think that political ideology is on this line, and communism is at the far extreme left and anarchy is at the extreme right. But I would take that long line and I would make it into a loop. And I think there's actually a very thin line between Marxism, communism, and anarchy. They are people who just hate capitalism at both ends of the spectrum. And so that is their common goal. And if, since America is a capitalist nation, I think that they are bonded by that. They want to bring down our city. They want to, as you say, bring down our country, because they despise capitalism. And that's what I think is at the essence of all these riots that are going on almost nightly in Seattle.
Totally. And if you look at it, the businesses that they will most likely target are big corporations that thrive off capitalism. So they very much hate capitalism, but also I just think that they hate their lives and themselves in general, because I don't know a normal person that would go out there nightly creating chaos in our country. And a lot of them, it's upsetting, because a lot of them are young teens, and you have to look at it, how are they being raised? And I honestly think it's just teens who are bored, who are suffering from mental health issues, mm-hmm. that are going out and feel like they have found some sort of community, but they're going down the wrong path.
Yeah, they have a gigantic void in their lives, in their souls, and instead of filling it with making themselves, you know, more productive economically, more lovable in, you know, relationships, they have chosen to fill this void with bile and with hatred and with violence. And I agree with you that, you know, I think there's a much larger issue, but I think the breakdown of the family is the single greatest ill that causes all of this. And you're right. I think there are just a lot of kids out there who, you know, I don't know what their family situations are, but I'm guessing they haven't been very good.
Yeah, I totally agree. And you know what? Because what's so upsetting about these protests is the attacks on press. So, you know, the police will refrain from going in because they don't want to become a news story. They don't want the focus on them. So they'll go in to these protests and make targeted arrests because if they impede too much, you know, Seattle City Council goes up in flames and, you know, the police impeded on the protesters' First Amendment rights. But at what point? You also have to look at it this way. In the United States, we have freedom of the press as well, which is also a granted First Amendment right. And Antifa, they spend their time attacking press, attacking local media, journalists, because they don't want their crimes being seen on camera. So when these attacks continue to happen, it's a huge disservice to the community, considering these protests need to be exposed. And the police stood back on two nights ago when press was attacked all night. They stood back, and that's actually impeding on press's First Amendment rights as well.
Sure.
So yeah, I think it's time for local press to get together and say, what's going on here? We're sick of being attacked. And because that's actually impeding on the First Amendment rights. I don't think that Antifa's violent protesting, if police went in, is impeding on the First Amendment rights. But they're actually impeding on press's First Amendment rights. So I think it's time for local news, everyone, to get together and sit down with the Seattle City Council, say, what's going on? This needs to end.
Yeah. Well, look, I appreciate, I think it takes a lot of guts to do what you do, and let's go out and chronicle this. As I said, I think it's very important when politicians try to paint some Pollyanna-ish picture of minimizing what's really going on out there. I think people like you help counteract that. It's always great talking with you, Katie. I appreciate you coming on with me today.
Thanks for talking. See you soon.
All right. Katie Davis Court, you can read her work at the Post Millennial, and she always has great stuff on her Twitter at Katie Davis Court. And yeah, we got to keep exposing this stuff. That is your Big Lead this hour.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
Will the teachers union let your kids get back in the building this school year? I bet you can guess the answer, but I'll tell you more coming up right after the news here on the Dory Monson Show. I needed to have something a little soothing to counterbalance how worked up I'm about to get. So the head of the State Teachers Union was on Seattle's Morning News, Larry Delaney. And I've told you for years, really for decades, there is no more destructive force in all of public policy than teachers' unions. Nothing more destructive in public policy than teachers' unions. Most teachers are great. Their unions are awful. So everybody says it's time to get kids back in school. Jay Inslee says it. The CDC says it. Everybody says it is time to get our kids back in school. But Larry Delaney, the head of the teachers union, he says, not until the teachers are all vaccinated.
We are glad that the CDC has released this guidance, and certainly we support the CDC guidelines. I think it's important to recognize that, that although they said vaccinations are not required, they did also say that that educators should be prioritized in the process. And certainly that's something that we continue to advocate for here in Washington.
Yeah, they're not going to let the teachers go back in the classroom, they say, until they get vaccinated. And here's a little more from Larry.
I think the governor has made his position very clear that he believes that vaccinations should be prioritized based on age. And he has reiterated that many times. We disagree. We believe that that prioritization should be given to educators working in person.
Why? Why? There are millions of people working in person in the state. Why should and I know it's, you cannot say anything bad about teachers. I'm not. I'm saying this about their union. But explain to me, explain to the guy who works at Home Depot, explain to the cashier at Albertsons why teachers should be prioritized over them for vaccines. Prioritizing everybody based on their age. Why should teachers be prioritized over radio talk show hosts? We're essential. Literally. I don't know why we're classified as essential, but we are. But everybody in media is, not just the talk show hosts. But remember, this is the guy, Larry Delaney, who a few months ago said, it doesn't matter if all the kids in our state are falling way behind.
Our kids are resilient. And yeah, I think one of the concerns that as a parent, we have concerns that, oh, is my child falling behind? Well, my question would be, falling behind who? Across the country, everyone has missed certain learning. So if everyone is, quote, behind, I guess no one is behind. And really,
didn't Karl Marx first say that? If everyone is behind, then no one is behind. I mean, and now most of the rest of the country has gotten back in class, in person, Larry. So now what do you say? Now our kids are falling behind relative to the rest of the country. As our friend Lee Finnis at Washington Policy Center, I just saw this on Twitter. Will Washington's teacher unions allow schools to reopen? And Lee wrote, the short answer is the union won't reopen schools no matter what the science says, no matter what the governor says, no matter what the state superintendent says, no matter what parents and students want and need, because the teachers' union wants for their employees maximum pay for minimal work, and there's nothing easier in the history of teaching than teaching from home on Zoom. And then if you missed this, this is my favorite audio of the day. This is from a school board meeting in Oakley, California, where it shows, and this is not restricted to Oakley. If you go into a lot of administration lounges, you'll hear the same sort of rhetoric where they just have contempt for parents. But they said about the parents who want their kids back in school, this one member of the school board says, yeah, parents are reading me nasty letters. They didn't know the public was watching their little Zoom meeting. But listen to what this one school board member said.
It's like, whatever. I wasn't doing anything bad. I honestly don't care about that part. But you know what? Are we alone?
Yeah.
If you're going to call me out, I'm going to f*** you up. Sorry. That's just me.
You know, they forget that there's real people on the other side of those letters that they're writing.
Yes.
We're real community members. We have kids or have known kids that have gone to these schools.
Right.
We have a vested interest in this process, and they don't know what we
right.
do behind the scenes. And it's really unfortunate exactly. that they want to pick on us because right. they want their babysitters back.
Right.
Right.
Right. Right. Right. Right. They all agree that the reason the parents want their kids back in school is not for emotional reasons, not to alleviate the kids' anxiety, not for educational reasons, but because the parents all want their babysitters back. Right, right, right. They all agree on that. That's the contempt that they have for parents who care about their kids and are distraught by their education. Here's another school board member. He has another theory why the parents want their kids back in school.
I totally hear that because my brother had a delivery. Yeah, my brother had a delivery service for medical marijuana. The clientele were parents with their kids in school.
Oh, all you parents who want your kids back in school, you want it so you can just sit at home and smoke weed. Because you can't do that in front of your kids. According to this school board member, the parents want their kids back in school so the parents can just smoke weed. And then, the best, is when one of the school board members realizes that the public is watching what they're saying.
Uh-oh. Laura Lanier, just FYI, you guys have the meeting. Oh, we have the meeting open to the public right now.
Nuh-uh.
That's what Laura just said.
Great.
Great. So you mean the parents just heard what we really think of them and their kids and our teachers? Our teachers are just babysitters. Parents are just a bunch of weed smokers. They all heard that? Uh-oh. Yeah, that's a big uh-oh. And here's one parent.
You know, I was shocked to hear that the district is representing our children this way.
And like I said, you can hear this kind of rhetoric from a lot of administrations in many, if not most, school districts.
The way one of them spoke about a social media post, how she said, you know, come at her and she'll come back at her or something. It was really shocking to hear that. It was appalling.
And, you know, I would ask all of you who want your kids back in school, do you want that for your kids' sake or so you can just stay home and smoke weed?
They see us writing letters monthly, weekly to the board members, you know, detailing our stresses and our grief about distance learning. So for them to say that we're doing nothing and we're sitting at home smoking pot is so far from the truth.
Or is it that you just want your teachers to be babysitters?
That's totally not correct. You know, we want our kids to have a good education, and it's important that our kids are learning from the best.
And I'm so glad this audio was public, because they thought they were just talking behind everybody's back. And if you don't, you have to understand, this is the kind of contempt that so many school administrations and the teachers' unions, certainly, have for parents and our kids. Just be armed with this kind of information as this debate continues to evolve. And we'll count down our favorite sound bites of the entire week, coming up next on the Dory Monson Show. And down the stretch we come. What a day, what a show, what a week, what a show. Let's get to our favorite sound bites of the week.
This is Dory Monson's awesome audio clips of the week.
You know, I said I was going to miss Donald Trump just for the audio he provided us, but Joe Biden, he's going to provide us some pretty regular audio cuts as well, it seems. He was talking at a town hall this week, and one of the things we found out from our president is minorities don't know how to use the internet.
The other portion is a lot of people don't know how to register. Not everybody in the community, in the Hispanic and the African-American community, particularly in rural areas that are distant and or inner city districts, know how to get online to determine how to get in line for that COVID vaccination at the Walgreens, right?
Wow. He also just lied or was too confused when he said that there was no vaccine when he became president.
And the biggest thing, though, as you remember, when you and I, we talked about, it's one thing that the vaccine, which we didn't have when we came into office, but a vaccinator. How do you get the vaccine into someone's arm?
And then from today, this is just earlier, he was at the Pfizer plant.
Also been in constant contact with mayors and governors, county officials, members of Congress, both parties. I've met with them in my office. I've met with them on the internet, on Zooming on with them. both parties in every state. And guess what? They agree we have to act now. I got a letter from more than 400 mayors from big cities and small towns. They understand we're not going to get our economy back in shape and the millions of people back to work until we beat this virus.
Well, at least the media will hold him in check.
He's adorable. He's so genuine and sweet and lovely and funny.
Good sense
and
of humor.
Everything you want in a man and in a president. You know, he's great. And he's right for these times. He's perfect. Perfect for these times, I think.
That was cathartic to watch.
I'm glad we have him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just decent.
I think it's why he didn't win before, because it wasn't his time, because he was going to be needed later on. And so, you know, I have to say, you know, he's a great riding buddy if you're on the train.
Yeah.
I love riding.
Right.
I'd catch up with him back and forth on the train. And he's just a great guy. He's a real guy. So I understand talking to him a lot. So I'm glad we got him too, Joy.
Wow. I mean, I can understand. Say, okay, I like him better than Trump. But this kind of hero worship. Wow. Jay Inslee talking to school kids in Puyallup.
Does anybody know where Mars is? Where's Mars?
In outer space.
It is. Which direction is it? Do you know? Is it that direction or that direction?
I'm guessing.
I don't know either, but it's above us, that's for sure.
It's above us. Mars is above us. Except for the times when it's below us. Let's see. Oh, we got John Kerry here. John Kerry. Let's see. I'm 59 years old. I'm not going to make it to 70, I just discovered.
How much time do we still have left to avert climate catastrophe?
Well, the scientists told us 3 years ago we had 12 years to avert the worst consequences of climate crisis. We are now 3 years gone, so we have 9 years left.
9 years, then we're all dead. And here in Seattle, we talked a couple of days ago with Joey Rodolfo, who's a very accomplished CEO in the clothing business for decades and decades. He's moved his business now to Arizona because of Seattle politics.
Seattle Today, and I was just there. I just got back from Seattle a couple of days ago. Right now, you know, when you let the governor and the mayor continued to run the city and turn it loose to BLM and Antifa, and they continued to destroy property like they did this last Sunday. They destroyed, you know, of course, Nordstrom's windows downtown for no apparent reason. And then there's no consequences. And we have a city attorney in Seattle that turns its back on business people.
Yeah.
Lets these people just run wild in the city and destroy property. Seattle, unfortunately, is circling the drain as we speak.
And Jerry told me that Jenny Durkin offered to buy him dinner.
He says, I'd like to buy her dinner. I said, Jenny, all I want you to do is serve up some law and order in this town. If you can serve up law and order in this town, we're all going to be better for it.
And then we wouldn't lose great businessmen like that. All right, I got to get out of here. Tom Curlier coming up next. God bless you in these crazy times. Have a great weekend. See you Monday. High noon. Hello.
Show me the way to go home. I'm tired and I want to go to bed. I had a little drink about an hour ago and I got it right to my head.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. You're really a fantastic audience.